This is John Floridis. Welcome to Musicians Spotlight. Today we welcome cellist Amit Peled. This is John Floridis. Welcome to Musicians Spotlight. I'm very pleased to be speaking by phone with Amit Peled.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
I want to tell listeners right off the top that amitpeled.com is the name of his website. I'm going to spell that for listeners, AmitPeled.com. And it's a wonderful website, really well laid out with all kinds of facts nice little tidbits about your career, as well as detailed biography and all that kind of stuff. Multiple recordings featuring compositions by Bach, Schumann, Dvorak, as well as a number of recordings with at least two trios and a gang.
Yeah,
the gang. We'll have to talk about the gang.
Yeah, the cello gang. This is really something very important for me. These are my students, and it's sort of like a dream come true to have them with me on stage and on the road. And we've been going actually all over the US, and we went to Mexico. We do a lot of outreach, a lot of educational work together. So very important for me to take them on stage, but also to make sure that they understand what it means to communicate with audience, and they have to engage, to talk, to play for kids. So I always kind of feel that this is neglected in the university level studies, where you teach them so well in the studio, but you never take them out to the real world. The Peabody Cello Gang is a chance for me to take the good students with me on the road. I pay them money. This is a complete professional engagement. And thus, I'm trying to hand them out to the real world. And it has been really great fun to do that. And I guess the climax of it was to make the CD
And are these all students from Peabody Conservatory, which I know you teach at Peabody there in Baltimore, right?
Yes, Peabody Conservatory is part of the Johns Hopkins University.
Yeah.
And it's in Baltimore, and I've been living here now for the past 16 years. So I arrived 16 years ago with my wife, two suitcases and a cello. And now my oldest daughter is 14, and I have two boys, 12 and 9.
Wow.
So here
Fantastic.
You go. That's life to you.
Yes, yes. Somewhere in there, you found time to publish a book as well, A Cello Named Pablo. So a lot of stuff going on in the life of Amit. And, you know, looking over things to talk about, you know, I couldn't help but notice all different kinds of hooks that journalists use, you know, when approaching you for a conversation, you know, 6'5" basketball playing, cello playing prodigy who grew up in a kibbutz, makes good with Pablo Casals' instrument, you know, something like that. And,
Well, it's quite unique, you could say.
Yeah, well, and this one I thought was kind of interesting. Jacqueline Dupre in A Farmer's Body. That's the one I didn't come up with. Somebody else came up with this one.
That was one of my best reviews, I have to say, because my grandfather was a farmer. He was a turkey farmer. And I grew up in a kibbutz where agriculture is the main way of living. So when the reviewer wrote that, that was like the biggest compliment and a sort of a clash of my worlds all together in one sentence. So that's wonderful.
Well, let's maybe start there. I mean, I can't say in all the hundreds of interviews I've done that I have interviewed someone who grew up in the kibbutz. And now, is that where, I want to hear about that, but I also want to know, is that where you developed a crush on a cello playing classmate, which inspired the start of this whole journey with music?
Yeah,
well, you know that story.
So a kibbutz is a social community. It's very common in Israel, and it's based on agriculture. And there are about, I would say, 500 members in a kibbutz. And it's sort of that my parents were very idealistic when they were young, and they wanted to be in a community where you contribute to the land, to the country, and everybody are equal. Everybody gets the same, and that's easy to find in Israel, let's say. So I grew up in my class, there were six kids only, and we used to run barefoot outside, and it's very beautiful nature, sort of like Montana, but not as cold, I would say. That's a very free and wonderful life for kids. And at fourth grade, part of the education was to pick an instrument. So I had to pick an instrument, and I picked a cello because of a girl who played cello, and I sort of wanted to get close to her, and she was older, so I didn't know how to. I was too shy to approach her, so I figured if I'll take the cello, she will marry me. That's how I thought.
Well, so that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, and of course it didn't happen, but I got stuck with the cello, and apparently I showed some talent. So the local teacher who came every week to teach in our really tiny music school saw that I'm talented, and I really loved him. He was really nice to me, and spent 3 hours with me every week, and I loved it. I was never asked to practice, but this teacher apparently was not so good. He was just very nice to me and very devoted. Luckily, there was a flute teacher in that school who came from the big city, from Tel Aviv, which is about 2 hour drive from our kibbutz. In American terms, it would be like 10 hour drive.
Okay.
In our small country. So he would come every week to teach, and he taught me chamber music. I used to do one group with him, and he picked my parents aside. I was by then 14, so this is after 4 years of studying cello. And he told them that if I don't change the teacher and go to study seriously, all this talent is going to be wasted. And he arranged for me an audition with one of Israel's best cello teachers at the time. And I was very upset because I loved my teacher. I remember I was even crying that, you know, why are you taking my teacher? I like it. And my mother convinced me to try, to give it a shot. And I did. And that teacher was really serious and sort of demanded that I practice 4 or 5 hours a day. And this is from 45 minutes a week, maybe. You know, and that was a huge change, and I didn't know how to cope with it, but I loved it, as I said, so I did it. But at the same time, when I was 14, I was really into basketball. And it became a point where I did the two very seriously. I had to wake up at 5 a.m. and practice 90 minutes of cello exercises and scales, then go to school. Then I went to training. Then I had games, once a week a game. So it was really doing a lot. So as I was in high school, I had to make a decision, just what between the two to choose. And my decision was based, again, being innocent and being young, was based on my height. I was not tall enough, I thought, back then, to become a real pro basketball player. So I said, well, we'll stick to the cello. I don't have to be that tall. But then I ended up being 6'5". So, but you know, now looking back, I don't think it was ever a question that the cello will stay.
Amit, I wanted to ask you about the kind of music that draws you in to perform it and to record it. Just a quick look at your recordings and your concert itinerary and so forth. It's very obvious that it's really important to you to explore a wide variety of works by a diverse range of composers. And I suppose, to some degree, that's the case that any successful musician in the, I'm going to use open air quotes, classical world, has to do some of that. But it seems like it's very important to you to explore the full range of the works that have been written for your instrument. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Well, for cellists, we don't have as many pieces as, let's say, pianists. Pianists, they have 27 piano concertos just by Mozart. And then there's just so it's 32 sonatas by Beethoven. We don't have that many pieces. So if you're a pianist, you can concentrate on just the classical era, let's say Schubert and Beethoven and Haydn, and you can make a whole career out of it. We don't have this privilege, and I'm thankful for that because I kind of have to go through the entire range of music, and by doing that, to go through the development of the instrument and to share it with the public. If I play a Bach suite, that's a pioneer composer who said for the first time, cello can be a soloistic instrument. And because of that, it's followed by other composers who wrote for the cello. And I can just present all of this in one recital. I think it's a much more interesting journey to share with the public and to do the same with recording. I try to record the whole range because it really shows the development of the voice of the cello through history. And I feel that my job as a performer, as a communicator, is to share that with the public. So it's not just to record it and to play it, it's also to explain it during the concert to people, to take the microphone, to spend a few minutes before each piece and to tell them, we're now in the First World War time, and this is what the other pieces that were written, and this is what the cello is right now, or this is Bach's suite where cellists never played anything like it, and all of a sudden Bach is writing this magnificent music. So I want to make the connection to people, to history, through history. So when they hear it, it's a more a visual and a complete experience. And it also takes me back to what you said very nicely about my website. I look at being an artist, sort of being a Renaissance artist, where you explore as many possibilities of sharing emotions through your art. So it could be through writing a children book, making a recording, making a tutorial video online, making a technique book for cellists to play from, conduct. I also conduct now. So it's a whole package of how you can express who you are through music. And the music is a big thing. So it could be through Bach, through Beethoven, through Dvořák, through piano trios, through modern music, working with living composers, and through conducting and through teaching and so on. So I'm very happy that you noticed it about my website, the way it is designed, but also about the repertoire, because that's exactly the package that I'm trying to deliver to the audience. Thank you.
This is John Floridus. You're listening to Musicians Spotlight. I'm speaking by phone today with Amit Peled. He's calling us from Baltimore, Maryland today, and that's from where we are having our conversation. Amit, I wanted to ask you, I mean, there's so many things so many directions I could go with this interview. Certainly, I would be remiss in not mentioning that for a number of years, and I can't remember if you're still doing this, but you were performing with Pablo Casals' cello. Now, those of our listeners who are, you know, more familiar with the classical world, of course, are going to know who Pablo Casals is, but our program features a number of different varieties of music. Some of our listeners might not even know who Pablo Casals is. So can you touch on this a little bit and talk about what it meant to you to be performing with this instrument? And spoiler for those listeners who don't know who Pablo Casals is, this is a really big deal.
Yeah, well, it's a huge deal. I mean, we talked about basketball before, so it's like somebody would tell a basketball player, do you want to do one-on-one with Michael Jordan, or do you want to wear his shoes that he wore in the last game in his life? And it's really huge. So
yeah, that's a good analogy.
This is our Michael Jordan, and this is his tool that he did his career with. So when I got the chance to play on the cello, I just couldn't believe it. I just going back to the kibbutz, when I started to play, my parents, who are not musicians, they wanted to encourage me, so they bought the little tape cassettes. I'm talking about the early 80s, you know, last century. And there was this boombox, if people remember, and I got this tape cassette for Hanukkah, which is like Christmas time, to hear music. And this tape cassette was played by Pablo Casals with the cello that 30 years later I will be playing. Now, of course, I didn't know back then who Pablo Casals was, but I can tell you one thing. As I was realizing that the girl is going away, I really fell in love with the cello through that tape cassette and through the sound, the voice of Pablo Casals. I used to put it on my bed and fall asleep with it. I would press the play button, and then by the time it was finished, I was asleep until the next day. So that was my routine, and that's how I fell in love with music. Many years later, when I got the chance to meet Mrs. Casals, who is still alive, his widow, and to play for her, I did not, in my wildest dreams, expected to get the cello. I just was introduced to her because she's a legend in our world, in the music world. And at the end of the session, when she heard me and sort of gave me a sort of a lesson, she suggested that she would lend me this instrument. I was just shocked.
Oh, I can't imagine. I couldn't believe it.
And I spent 6 years with a cello, exploring my sound through it, but also sharing the legacy of Pablo Casals all over the world, literally in every corner of the world. It really, now looking back, I can tell you that what it did, it taught me a great lesson of what to program in concerts, how to communicate with people, to take time to play in small places, because he did it. All of those things that I'm mentioning now, he did himself, being much more famous than I am. But still, he did it. He played in Duluth, Minnesota. He played in Montana. He played in Tucson, Arizona. I found programs of him from 100 years ago from all over the U.S., and I've revived them. I've revisited them exactly 100 years later on the same cello, which was really a lot of fun to do.
Wow.
And these kind of experiences taught me his ability to connect as a human being to people, but also the kind of pieces that he played. And this is very different than what people do today. It was much more alive. It was much more entertainment. It was shorter programs. And also many reviews have mentioned that the great master stayed after concert to talk for each member of the audience. Sometimes for an hour and a half, he would stay at the hall to engage, to talk to each member of the audience. So that's something that we don't experience with famous people today. You can't even go backstage to talk to them. So I've learned from having the cello so much about the being an artist, not just the privilege of playing such a great instrument. And one of the things Mrs. Casals told me when I got the cello, she said, go share his legacy, but also go and find your voice.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't get it until now. Until now, when I tell you this, and I realized really finding my voice was not necessarily just me and the cello and the bow that draws the sound out of it. It was much more of realizing who he was as an artist and how I can incorporate it into reviving classical music today. And it really showed me the light of what I have to do and what I've been doing as myself, as an artist. And if the listeners are interested, there are many videos with the cello on YouTube and a whole CD of homage to him that is available, and many, many other things, including the children book, which is the cello itself telling the story of how it was conceived in Venice in 1733 and how it traveled the world until it got into be with me in my hands. And it ends up telling the kids that are hearing the story that, you know, if you live up to your dreams and you work hard, maybe one day you and the cello will become good friends. And it just shows that if you work hard, your dreams can come true. And it's such a beautiful ending, I think, and cute, and it's illustrated in such a beautiful way that kids have sort of a light at the end of the tunnel. And if they play, and if I share the book and the cello with them, they can get excited about what they do. It doesn't have to be cello. It could be basketball. It could be science. Anything you do, you might be the next Einstein. You might be the next Michael Jordan. Who knows? Just work hard.
We'll be back with more Musicians Spotlight in our interview with Amit Peled. Welcome back to Musicians Spotlight and our visit with cellist Amit Peled. Thank you. This is John Floridus. You're listening to Musicians Spotlight, and I'm speaking today by phone with Amit Peled, and he's calling us from Baltimore, Maryland. Amit, we've kind of made basketball allusions in addition to many allusions about many references regards to music and to composition and Pablo Casals. But I do want to try to have some fun and kind of combine the two things. Because of your love of the game of basketball and your obvious passion for music and for cello, can we talk about some parallels maybe that you can take a look at from your journey with that game and your journey through music? Oh, I can think of some good ones, but I want to hear it.
There are many parallels to the basketball game and just to being an athlete. And I visit them, I have to say, almost every day when I teach my students. I mean, the first and most obvious one for me, at least, is physicality. You know, I call myself today a musical athlete. We are using our bodies. Our bodies is, my body is my Stradivarius, I like to say. And if you don't know how to use it, you will get injured and you won't be able to sustain a long career, let alone the fact that your body creates the sound. And if we were in the same room now with a cello, I could show you how, even if I put my back, if I make my back tight and up, what it does to the sound. If I release tension on my elbows, what it does to the sound. So really every bit of motion and emotion in my body can be connected. And it's the same as a basketball player. I sometimes show my students from YouTube, I show them videos of Michael Jordan play, of LeBron James play, because these people, they hardly ever get wounded. It's poetry in motion, I call it. And these people know how to play, and I take them to watch Federer playing tennis. It's the same thing. If you look at Nadal playing tennis or Federer, you see the difference between a dancer and sort of an animal. Now, both of them are geniuses. Both of them are terrific in the game. But one of them get injured every single tournament, and the other one sustain a career is now, I think, 37. It's just unbelievable. And this kind of motion is what we need to learn to do when we play, because it's all about using and distributing your weight into emotion. So this is a big, big part. And then comes the psychological part. The psychological part of being part of a team. What does it mean to be part of a team? It means that you are able to listen, not only to force yourself on a team. When Michael Jordan won his championships, he did not force. He had people that helped him. He had people that he trusted. Now, in music, and this is now can go even to politics and what democracy means, because I've started also talk to businessmen in conferences. Music, I think, is the best lesson of democracy, because you kind of have to listen. If I don't listen when I make music, I'm not together with my partner. And it's the same in basketball. If you are the greatest player, you won't be able to win a championship if you're not able to listen or to share the ball. Like that game in Miami where Chris Bosh shared the ball with Ray Allen. And in the last second, he shot the 3 points and made it possible for LeBron to win the championship. Now, LeBron brought them there. But without Ray Allen shooting that amazing three-pointer, that you know, without the trust in giving him the ball, there would be no Miami Heat championship. And that's exactly what you do in music. Without the ability to listen to your partner, you cannot succeed and rise to create magic. And I think it's something that a lot of people in other fields do not understand. And that's why I kind of force my kids to play music also, because I want them to be able to listen. It's not, you know, in music, the good part of it is that you don't have to do it. You're forced to do it, because music forces you to listen. And I think it's the core aspect of democracy is to be able to listen to another opinion. Mm-hmm. And this really something that with music we are learning to do from very, very early on, is to be able to listen. And it's something that unfortunately in our society with what is happening, it's not the case. So I'm trying with the music to realize it first, and then to connect it to sport, because kids are much more connected to sport. But one time we did a show, a concert, I call it a performance chat. We did it in Reading, Pennsylvania. And we met with the basketball team, but we met with them and we tried to explain to them what it means to listen and to support each other when you play chamber music, when you play with a partner. And then the coach tried to explain the same thing when you do defense. Now, when you work on defense on a team, it's very hard to hear you when there are a lot of people in the arena and you can't really hear each other. But you have signs and you can feel each other. And you have to, because if you make a little mistake, you know, the ball would be in the paint and you get a dunk on your face. So there's a lot of communication going between a team members that if you don't have, you cannot succeed. I mean, you can get to a certain point, but look at James Harden now with Houston. I mean, he might get to play against Golden State. That it looks like it. Mm-hmm. But I doubt it that he's going to win it alone. And he is alone. I mean, he's not, you know, the great Chicago team had such a supporting cast, such a supporting team. And it goes the same way to the Lakers with Kobe and Shaq and so on. So that's the similarities that I try my students to understand from sports. It's first the physicality and then the communicating skills that one needs to have in a team and one has to have in making music together. Thank you.
You know, I'm a little bit older than you, so I grew up watching and being pulled into basketball during the era of Julius Erving, Dr. J, and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and Magic Johnson, and Larry Bird. And the thing with those teams, wow. because there were, you know, they were, you know, the league was smaller. There weren't as many teams, so you had kind of more of a congestion. So those teams, the Sixers back in those days, of course, the Lakers and the Celtics. You watch those games, they're all there's like five or six Hall of Fame players in addition to Magic Johnson and Larry Bird and yeah. Julius Erving. Yeah, and the thing that's amazing is that just having all those great players together does not ensure that it's going to be a great team, just as if you have a band or an orchestra, whether it's, you know, rock or jazz or, yeah. or classical world, you can put all the great players together and think, oh, this on paper, this should be fantastic. But like you say, if you don't have the listening and the communication and the chemistry, you're not going to be successful. So I love those analogies.
You know, it goes along. I mean, the analogy works in every level of it. And when you go to an orchestra, now I start to conduct a lot. And being a conductor can easily be preserved as just a dictator. You just tell them what to do. But yet, when you think of the most successful coach in NBA history, Phil Jackson, you know, he was not a dictator. He was what we call the Zen master.
Right.
I mean, he made them shine. He made them blossom. And as a conductor, you can do the same. I mean, you can have authority, of course, like Popovich, like Phil Jackson. But at the same time, you allow your greatest players to shine in that last second of the game. And it's the same as a conductor. You know, if you have a horn player that has a solo, even not contact, have an eye contact with them. Don't. Just let them be. They might give you a better solo than if you force them to look at you and to be scared of you. So there's so many similarities, and I'm so thankful that I've been in both worlds. So I can really take it and really bring the art of music now, because it's what I do. And I would, let's call it the art of communication, to another level. And that's why when I do those concerts these days, when I try to connect also by speaking to the public, I see a great reaction when, for instance, I talk about democracy or about listening or about creating sound together and creating society together. There's such great correlations, and it always ends up in education and in the fact that we as parents, and let's say the older generation, which I'm entering maybe slowly, we have to make sure that public schools and young kids will have music. We really have to, because there's absolutely not even one bad quality about it. I think it should be mandatory as math and English and languages in schools. Thank you.
Thank you.
This is John Floridis. You're listening to Musicians Spotlight. I'm speaking today with Amit Peled, and I want to repeat the website address for our listeners. I'm going to spell it AMITPELED, amitpeled.com. That's where you can find out more about Amit's world, which is vast and wide and ever-changing. You know, we started the interview talking about all the hooks, you know, that one can find in trying to approach you for an interview. And those are fun and they're true. But hearing you perform with the Missoula Symphony in Montana is what brought you to my ears for the first time. And, you know, that's why we're speaking to you. You have a tremendous presence on stage. And no, I don't mean just because of your height. Now, maybe it was because you were standing next to Darko, who's about the same height. But the thing that struck me about your playing is you play like you mean it. You know, it feels like the audience is invited in on that as well, which is, that's not always the case. There's some great musicians who can play like they mean it, but it can be kind of at a distance. And I really appreciate that about your playing. You really seem to draw people in.
You just made my day.
Oh, well, great. It's very, very true. I think of this, another quote that I pulled up from your website. Forgive me, I can't remember to whom it is attributed, but his amiable and inviting personality is exactly the type everyone says we'll need more of if classical music is to survive. I think the music can survive pretty well, but certainly it needs ambassadors, and you're a true ambassador of this wonderful music. It's been a real pleasure getting a chance to talk shop with you. I know you have Montana connections, and so hopefully we'll get a chance to do another interview down the road and have that be face-to-face.
Oh, I hope so too. And yes, Montana is very dear to me, and I really love the people, the nature, and every time I go there, it's really special and a pleasure.
This is John Floridis. You've been listening to Musicians Spotlight. Our guest today has been Amit Peled. If you'd like to contact us, you can do so through the Montana Public Radio website, mtpr.org, as well as through our own website, musicianspotlight.org. And you can also find us online on Facebook and on Twitter. Our program is available as a podcast from those websites, as well as through iTunes. Special thanks to the Missoula Symphony for this interview. Musicians Spotlight is a production of Montana Public Radio.